So good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the, today is the 9th day of October 2018. And I am Peter Wickham in with you until 1:30. And looking forward to have some interesting conversations today. Our call number is 434-1790. As you probably know, Mr. Dennis Johnson is your technical guru. Also, he is your producer. He is the person who you will speak to when you call. He puts you through. And if you run afoul of the law, he will cut you off. And that's the way it goes. You can also WhatsApp me, as you know, on 266-IVOB. Already the WhatsApp has been active with people sending various comments. I also love to hear from you via email. Peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. So, a couple of reflections today for you. And the first one starts with the acknowledgement that this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Sadly, I was unable to locate my soul pink t-shirt this morning. I looked long and hard so that I could do my standard photo opportunity wearing pink, and that did not work out. So unfortunately, there will be no posting of a picture today. I need to get some level of pinkness in my life. I'm going to probably, when I leave here, I'm going to find out if I can get one whole of the Cancer Society shirts. Sadly, I wasn't able to make the Cancer Society march on Sunday, but I was really overwhelmed with the response, even though I was not there. I'm happy that so many Barbadians turned out. You know, matters relating to breast cancer are extremely important. And I'm so happy that it has gained a level of prominence. I was happy to see the Prime Minister there, and I was happy to see her in shorts, marching proudly, along with other members of the cabinet. I was also happy to see my former Minister of Finance, Christopher Sinclair, my good friend, who I had not seen for quite some time. I wasn't here in Cropover. Apparently, he made a guest appearance at one of the fets, and I'm happy that Chris was out marching proudly with the Breast Cancer Awareness Group. I'm also happy to see that he ran. I think that speaks volumes, the fact that he is running again, and he is fit as a fiddle. And I think that speaks volumes about what we can look forward to in the future. So happy to see you, Chris. Also happy to see Prime Minister Motley, other members of the cabinet that marched. I was happy to see them. And the fact that so many Barbadians from all walks of life, you know, the small, the large, the old, the young, all came out and marched for a cause that is important. The challenge to the men, however, I would say, is I am happy that you proudly march with the women and associate yourself with this issue. We men, however, need to look at similar issues for ourselves, questions of prostate awareness. And I think that we also need to take a bold step in that direction and be as comfortable expressing concerns about that area of our anatomy as we are expressing concerns about breast cancer awareness. And I am always amazed and happy at the fact that women are able to present these issues and to take control of their destiny in these ways, which we men seem not able to. So I support the women in this. I'm happy as we go forward. I had some concerns, and several people sent me email regarding this matter of the SCL or Cambridge Analytica. And there was a head of Cambridge Analytica who made a comment regarding our former Prime Minister, or our current Prime Minister, who at the time was leader of the opposition, using the N-word. And the suggestion, of course, is that this was something that he used in reference to her when he was unable to secure work in Barbados. I haven't talked a lot about Cambridge Analytica, largely because I haven't been prompted so to do. As you all know, I'm in the business of political consulting, so I have come across the organization once or twice in the past. There was an occasion when a former client of mine suggested that I should work with them to learn a thing or two about polling. And I said I had no interest in associating with SCL, as it was known at the time, because I thought that they were a bunch of frauds, quite frankly. And I am happy to see that the rest of the world is now as familiar with their behavior as I was. I happen to know a couple of the nastiest things that organization has done, and some of it has been brought to light, others of it hasn't. And it says to me that they were not consistent with the culture and practices of the Caribbean. And their thing was about winning by any means necessary. And that made me extremely uncomfortable. So I've never worked with them. I know a couple of people who have, but as I said, I'm familiar with their ways and means. The suggestion that they would refer disparagingly to our former prime minister does not surprise me because, as I said, you know, for them, it's all about a paycheck. Handsome paycheck in their case, and that's really all it comes down to. They have no interest in the region. I work across this region, and I love the Caribbean, and while people may think that I am a bandit for hire, I do love this region. I want to work towards our greater development in any way possible. Now, this is something that Cambridge Analytica cannot share, and it has always bothered me over the years that we have had consultants like this operating in the Caribbean. And if there's one good thing I can say about this year of elections, whether it be Grenada, whether it be Antigua, whether it be Barbados, both BLP and DLP, both NNP and NDC, both ABLP and UPP in Antigua, there was no presence of foreign white consultants, or let me not say white consultants, there was no presence of consultants, period, in foreign consultants in any of these places working on either side of the fence. And that is something about which I believe we can all be quite happy that we have moved in a direction where we are taking control of our own destiny. The days of Jennifer Laszlo and SCL and so on are over, apparently, and we have our own people taking control of elections and piloting the way forward. A whole lot cheaper. And I think it's also important that we fundamentally ground it. So my view on the issue is, look, you know, I'm not surprised. This is the way that these people behave. And I think that we have done a huge effort in terms of emancipating ourselves from that type of nonsense. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, was this whole question of the adjustment, structural adjustment, and the extent to which it has fallen on some shoulders unfairly. And I received an extensive note from a good friend of mine that I wanted to share with you today. And perhaps since it is now 9 minutes past the hour of 10, I'll share it with you a little later in the program. And in the meantime, we'll start to take some calls, 434-1790. I believe we have some calls coming in. And 434-1790, good morning or welcome.
Greetings.
Hey, Marsha, how are you doing?
Hey, Peter, how are you?
I'm not bad. You marched on Sunday?
Croak in your throat. I didn't. I had another meeting that was clashing. I wasn't very happy about that, but it was very good to see everybody go down and support the cause. Mm-hmm. And I fully endorse your opening comments that, you know, we stand with the women and we want them to do their checks and that kind of thing, but we also want men to become much more comfortable in terms of dealing with their own checks. And also remembering that they can be predisposed to breast cancer as well, so it's not necessarily, you know, a man-woman thing here. We're all trying to get healthier and deal with ourselves more appropriately.
How frequently do men get breast cancer?
It's not as high as the numbers for females, but they are some physicians who will tell you that, you know, men also should do their own checks and be cognizant of their own, I don't know what you would call it. I don't know if it's a breast region in men. Mm-hmm. But that, yeah, you generally pay attention to your body. And if there are any concerns, you know, you talk to your physician. You have your yearly checkup and you do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Just before I launch into what I want to discuss today, I saw this article this morning where our former Minister of Education is refraining to comment on this, I don't know what to call it, debacle crisis, this development with the overseas foreign university and one of its head people ending up running afoul of the law. Mm-hmm. In Barbados. I thought that I saw an article some time ago that indicated some kind of relationship between our former minister and the university. I'm perhaps wrong now because, like I said, he
isn't Washington, no.
Okay.
He's a registrar. He is vice chancellor. But I believe it's the one down by the River Road.
Ah, I see.
Not the River Road, by the Harbor Road, right? We are on the River Road. Yeah, on the Harbor Road. Again, where Rose
based up. I see where the confusion is.
Yeah, he's vice chancellor of another one, but not Washington.
Okay. Yeah. But I think in the context of him having been the person to spearhead this grand introduction and expansion of this tertiary medical tourism education sector, that really he should come and comment on the matter.
I agree.
And offer contextualization and a clarification of what could have happened.
I agree. I think he ought to. I agree with you entirely. I heard him saying that he's a private citizen. No, that's foolishness. I think we need to understand what was the process that led them toward giving a license to this institution, to assuming that they did have a license.
I saw again in the same article that they had not yet passed the accreditation process as set down by the Barbados Accreditation Council.
Mm-hmm.
One of the parents indicated, and again I'm just repeating what I saw in a section of the press, one of the parents would have indicated that he thought that he got the understanding from somebody in the Ministry of Education at a very high level that the matter of the accreditation was basically just, a matter of stamping a couple of things and everything would be sorted. And especially in the context of what that parent thought he understood, I think that an explanation from the former, he might be a private citizen, no, but he's the former Minister of Education under whose watch this circumstance grew into what it is today. And I really think that he owes the people of Barbados that he would have represented, and also the people, the wider taxpayers, whose privilege he would have served at, a discussion and a contextualization of what would have happened.
Right. No, I agree with you entirely. I think that we need to hear something about why, what was the process that led to them and why they got here.
Absolutely.
I support the idea of, these offshore schools coming. I always have. My challenge is that I know that there are some problem spots. And sadly, and I'm not being disparaging here, Africa and India. There have been some challenges with African universities, and there have been some challenges with Indian universities. Anybody who's familiar with medical education knows that there is a premium on medical education in the wealthier parts of Africa and also the wealthier parts of India. And unfortunately, there are scams that proliferate in these areas where people appear as professors of medicine and surgery with high qualifications, and then there's some challenges. And my thing is that if I know that, and I'm not in this field, one would think that people who are in the field are also aware. And when you have applications coming from schools which are seeking to escape from India to offer medical education offshore, is it not something that you should investigate with greater fervor because you know the challenges associated with that region?
No, you see, Peter.
And I'm not being racist here. Let me make this abundantly clear. No. I'm not being racist. It's just that you know what you know.
I don't think you're being racist, but it forms a great launch pad as well for what I really call to talk about today, because what you're talking about there is regulation, and people who have oversight for regulation, making sure that they do a strenuous job, because you don't get up one morning with a problem like what we had play out over the last couple of days. It is indicative of questions that needed to be asked not having been asked. It is indicative of this perception that we don't want Barbados to become known for, that we kind of don't pay the attention, dot the I's, cross the T's, that we need to dot and cross. And that really is, like I said, a perfect launch pad for me to kind of give you an update of this credit union matter and where we are with that. We've gotten, finally, the date for the special general meeting for members of the Barbados Public Workers Cooperative Credit Union. It will be held next Monday, 5:30, at the Public Workers Headquarters on Belmont Road. And like I said, I really think that this particular meeting provides an opportunity for the membership of the credit union to come out and to discuss their credit union, where it is now, the direction that it is going in, and the expectations. You know, we live in a society where everybody is calling for accountability. Everybody is calling for transparency. Everybody is calling for integrity. But it seems to me like that call gets a little softer when we recognize that all of us are going to have to be held to higher standards of accountability, transparency, and integrity. It is not something that is connected only to individuals at, who offer political service. There is a culture that is set down for our country. There is a culture that is set down for our business. It is either we're going to be known as a place of integrity, transparency, and accountability as a country, and members within our political class do that, members within our educational sector do it, members within our credit unions do it, or we're simply not going to be known for it. And I think that's very much a national question that is still with us post May 24th, and one that we've got to find tangible answers for. You know, there are individuals in Barbados who feel that when you want to question or when you want to get more information, you're being a nuisance. It's not that. It's not that. Airing issues is a good way to ensure that thoroughness is brought to a process, and that these little things that can creep in and cause trouble, you know, in whatever way, whether it's intentional trouble or, you know, just trouble from people not paying attention, doesn't happen. And I'm hoping, I'm just really, really hoping that individuals come out to the meeting and get a sense of what is happening with respect to the credit union next Monday.
Okay. All right, Marcia, thank you for that. And also thank you for raising the other issue that you raised with regard to education. Someone is just telling me, didn't Miss Motley? And another WhatsApper is raising concerns about the fact that the... can't read that one. Yeah, the former St. George's University had issues with cadavers, you know, and I guess the cadaver issue is a small matter now compared to where we are. And I don't know if any of you have been to Grenada recently and visited St. George's University, but suffice to say they have moved some way away from the cow shed that they inhabited back in the day when they were essentially running away from the revolution in Grenada. So yeah, things have moved on. Down to Brass Tacks, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I want to read this note that I received last week. And it says, Peter, as I said, this is from an economist who shall not be identified. Peter, the hot topic now is the impact of debt restructuring on pensioners. And I thought that I would share a perspective with you that may or may not influence your own thinking. First, I sympathize with these pensioners. Unfortunately, though, there is a financial naivety that exists in Barbados, which is astounding. People get lured by promises of past returns when, in fact, security should be judged by the fundamentals of the issue and agency. So we have trade confirmers, we have CLECO, we now have government treasury bills. Within the context of a country with a debt-to-GDP ratio of 150%, how does this happen? The first rule of investing is that there's no such thing as a safe investment. Experts will tell you that you should never invest money that you cannot afford to lose. So let's talk about the fundamentals of the issuing agency, the government of Barbados. A critical indicator when judging a government's security is its debt-to-GDP ratio and the direction in which that ratio is going. In essence, if it is higher than 60% and growing over a prolonged period, this is a symptom of bad management. You wouldn't buy a security issued by an entity that is badly managed with money that you absolutely need, whether it is the Bank of Scotland, Lehman Brothers, Trade Confirmers, CLECO, or indeed your own government. Barbados was bound to restructure eventually. The restructuring is still being worked out, and to the credit of the government, they're trying to limit the impact of pensioners. But this story wasn't written on May 24th and has to be made clear. A government's main duty is to advance the standard of living in a country in an orderly and sustainable manner. Many countries do that by borrowing resources, so debt is in itself not a bad thing. However, when you are racking up debt and it is not reflected in the advancement of the income of the country, there is a problem. So the fact that the debt-to-GDP ratio grew from 70 in 2008 to 150 in 2018 is symptomatic of horrendous management of Barbados' finances and our economic affairs. At best, it says that expenditures were not delivering growth. At worst, The outrage that Barbadians need to have about is the fact that our country was badly managed in the past 10 years and the fact that we have accumulated loads of debt, but that still have bad roads, bad ports, unmodernized paper-based institutions in the digital age, and no transparency in the public sector to help Barbadians hold their leaders accountable. And turning to the NIS, it was forced to buy government paper, which should have been fine if the borrowing was used to make the economy more competitive and resilient, so that employment would increase and contributions would also increase. Otherwise, it would have been wiser to allow the NIS to buy stock in Apple, forcing the NIS to invest in government paper when government paper was being used for wastage, creates a vicious cycle that is worsened by the aging population factor and the flight of best trained individuals to countries because of a lack of opportunities. I do not think that people properly appreciate the damage that has been done to this country. So when pensioners that used borrowed funds to make the country more competitive by upgrading roads, upgrading ports, digitizing government information so that businesses could save on productivity losses that result from spending hours of business time in lines, paying taxes and renewing licenses. If the loans had been used to do these things, as well as creating legislation to encourage investment and legislation like venture fund legislation, modern insolvency legislation with commercial courts, etc., then exports and employment and growth would have been created, and that would have increased NIS contributions and employment. The state of the current debate disappoints me, largely because professors are engaging in pedestrian arithmetic exercises that are not diagnostic or solution-oriented. They do not understand the dynamics of policy imperatives in a small open economy, so they are not helping generate solutions that could guide our politicians. In this context, I would say thank God for the International Monetary Fund. Of course, I'm not telling you who is the person that sent it to me, but this is an economist that I have great confidence in. I have always had great confidence in over the years. And the views that he expressed in many ways mirror a lot of the comments that I made on Friday about the reality of investment. We have an option. If you earn a dollar, you can put the dollar under your mattress. The fact is that if you put your dollar into a system, the benefit that you gain is that you could gain interest. The concern that you gain is that you could lose it. And I think the point that is being made here is that this idea of a wise investment, this idea of a pensioner saying to me, I had to buy government treasury bills because they were offering 6.5% in a situation where the bank was offering 2%, so I had no choice, is something that I am not persuaded by, because certainly if you follow the information that was just given to us, the idea of government being able to pay 6.5% over the long term was entirely unrealistic. So, yes, we have to protect the pensioners, and I think that an announcement has been made consistent with what I was saying last week, that my expectation is that something would have been done to ease persons who are in the 70-plus age group, to allow them to enjoy their principal a lot sooner. But the fundamental reality of those interest levels is unsustainable, and this process is one that's going to be painful, and I think that we need to do ourselves a favor as a country, and I'm sorry I'm talking so long today, to get away from this NIMBY principle. You can do whatever you have to do, but don't let it affect me. No, we all enjoyed the last 10 years or endured the last 10 years and said nothing. When we went to the polls in 2013 and I expressed a concern that we had done ourselves a disservice, people cussed me. But in the final analysis, we have the benefit of this now, of understanding what really happened to Barbados over the last 10 years, and the fact that the only people that we have to hold responsible for is ourselves. So we got to deal with the pain. It's as simple as that. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, good morning.
Greetings and salutations to your good self.
Thank you. Greetings and salutations to you, sir. I just heard that Nikki Haley resigned. Is that true?
Pardon?
I just saw a note saying that Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, has resigned. And I said, is that true?
No, I haven't heard it.
Okay. All right, you carry on, sir. Let me not interrupt your flow.
I like to first reflect back to the past years of the 1960s. Then we'll reflect on inexactitude. It was interpreted by some, you can't take Ernest Dyson Motley from the city, but you can take the city from Ernest Dyson Motley. By interpreting inexactitude, I am not telling a lie, It's a terminological inexactitude. I say that, sir, to say this. The Honourable Mayor of Mor Mortley, our Prime Minister, has a very serious responsibility by taking all measures deemed necessary to get the economy back on track. Therefore, today, the Office of the Ombudsman, the Royal Commission, and certain positions at the Caribbean Board Casting Corporation can be revisited. Some short-sighted and selfish individuals may be thinking more about oneself than the country. But one should remember, and I am saying this deeply because I know how you do react to certain religious statements, so take this as a sense of humor. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Quickly, he was faced with a class action lawsuit for failure to file an environmental impact statement. Therefore, Auditor General should have the legal authority to take those to whom he considers is guilty of monetary offenses before a court of law. And in conclusion, sir, the highlighting of the so-called Washington University of Barbados last week. Mr. Vickram, as a layman, I am going to appeal to ordinary Barbadians to be very careful if they deem it necessary to make comment. Do so with caution, Dictor. In my opinion, and it's my belief, the person that should make a response to the Washington University of Barbados should be the former Minister of Education in the President Stewart administration or the former Joint Secretary of the Democratic Labour Party. I listen for a response, sir.
Okay. And I want to thank you for your contribution this morning, short and crisp, as always. WhatsApp is saying, will someone please shed light on my problem? I'm a pensioner living alone. I receive $376.54 every 2 weeks. Non-contributors receive $450 every 2 weeks. Where is the logic? Also, my water bill has gone from $32 to $76, and I was told that pensioners living alone would only have to pay half. Can someone please explain? So if there's anyone out there who can explain, do let me know. Apparently, Nikki Haley has resigned, and it's an interesting development. I would have thought that she, if she were inclined to resign, she would have done it a long time ago. But yeah, that lady has taken a battering over the past months. That I find fascinating. Clearly, she's now had enough, or alternatively, she's been asked to resign, one of the two. But the fascinating thing continues to be the Trump administration. Peter, your economist fails to take into account the persons who are laid off or who use the constraints of the pension scheme but had no choice but to invest in government paper for the best of themselves. I agree there's no such thing as a safe investment, that we have to be realistic about the economy. But we have to. I also agree that the brain drain of persons' experience are not being considered for jobs that are now being considered too old to employ, and these years of experience and knowledge will be lost. Yes, I understand that we must be cognizant that the youth must be considered for the future, but what about the persons who are in the middle? Too young to be a pensioner and too old to be youth, but are full of education and knowledge, being brushed aside to work in basic jobs, or who eventually will leave frustrated to find jobs outside this island if they would prefer to stay and rebuild. This is a serious issue that is being overlooked. And ma'am, I must tell you, yes, it is a lady. I don't think that the economist failed to take into consideration that at all. I think the economist was making a very clear point that if you were one of those people who was laid off, the idea that you had no choice, which is the words that you have used, but to invest in government paper for the best of yourself is something that he is challenging and that I am also challenging. The argument is that you may think that investing in government paper was wise. However, if you look at the broader picture, the investment in government paper was an investment in an entity that was clearly unstable, that was being badly managed, and any financial advisor who looked at our debt-to-GDP ratio and the extent to which it was galloping would say that buying government paper in Barbados was akin to buying an investment in trade confirmers in Clico or in the other one that they had in Antigua with the guy that they eventually locked up, you know, Stanford. So the point that is being made is you should look at government paper no differently than you would look at Apple stocks, at Clico annuities, at Trade Confirmers investments. It's the basic argument that is being used. So the idea that you had no choice but to do that is something which I think he would have challenges with, and I also have challenges with. The reality is that the layoffs were challenging. The reality is that when some people got money, this is how they invested it. And I'm not denying that that was an unfortunate reality. But the question is, how can you blame the current administration that got into office on the 24th of May for a problem that was clearly created when someone else laid them off without providing sufficient opportunities for investment and to use these funds? And these are the kinds of issues that we have to deal with. If, for example, and I think one of the things the Prime Minister has been saying is, when we start laying off people, we have to look for clear investment opportunities. Let's say, for example, we decide to go ahead with a new hotel, and that provides an opportunity for persons who have had some money as a result of being laid off to invest in these things where they can get real returns down the road. That's the kind of conversation that we need to be having. You know, not saying I lay you off and then I give you government treasury bills at a interest rate that's unsustainable. And the full knowledge that whenever we start to do the haircut, that you are the person who's going to have to be shaved.